The internet is a vast and seemingly never-ending space, a valuable tool for anyone who dares to use it. With great power comes great responsibility. Though, and time again, we see history repeat itself in the worst of ways. Among the many corners of the internet, communities have risen and made their home. YouTube is perhaps the most significant pillar of all of these communities, a place where nearly everyone has the opportunity to create and share online content with millions across the globe. With hundreds of thousands of hours of content uploaded nearly every minute, there is virtually no one around who doesn't spend at least some time on YouTube. The eclectic group of entertainers who make YouTube content is affectionately known as YouTubers. Generally, YouTubers are seen as fun-loving entertainers with a passion for a specific niche in content. Many look up to these entertainers as inspirational role models. But what if I told you that even a fun-loving place like YouTube has a dark side? What if I told you that even the most family-friendly, light-hearted YouTubers potentially have a dark secret? Welcome to The Dark Side of YouTube. I'm your host, Autumn Ivy, and with this series, my team and I will be taking the deepest dives into the darkest and most disturbing corners of YouTube. These are the stories YouTube doesn't want you to know about. From the creators of The Dark Side of Gaming and The Dark Swamp Horror Stories, you won't want to miss a single minute of The Dark Side of YouTube. Hey, Darksiders. So glad to see you back. And just in time. This week, we're diving into the case of Trey Sessler, the man many credit with paving the way for other anime review channels.
Even if you've never seen a Mr. Anime video, you've probably heard the name. But either way, you're about to learn all there is to know. Grab your snacks, vices, and blankets now.
Because we're officially returning to the darkness. Trey Sessler was born August 3rd, 1989, in Waller, Texas. He had an older brother named Mark and two happily married, loving parents. His father, Lawton, was a teacher, and his mother, Rhonda, worked for the local newspaper, the Waller Times. By all accounts, Trey seems to have grown up in a nurturing environment. He wasn't abused at home, nor was he troubled by bullies at school. He was quiet-natured and a bit of a loner, but people generally considered him a pretty good kid. Even after he turned 13 and devised a plan to call 911 in order to report a suspicious figure lurking outside of his home. He wanted to hide in the woods with a baseball bat and ambush the arriving officer. The hope was to steal a gun and patrol car so he could drive to a friend's house and shoot him. But, thankfully, this plan never came to fruition. If I understand correctly, he actually shared this scheme with one of his teachers, which, of course, resulted in a psychiatric evaluation. But the matter was ultimately dropped. As Trey grew older, he seemed to mature, and his previous behavior was written off as a boys-will-be-boys situation. Looking back, I think we can safely call that a whopping mistake. Early YouTube career. In September 2006, when Trey was about 16, he created his first YouTube channel, LensCap Productions. But it wasn't for anime reviews. He started off with short comedy skits. I watched him on a channel called Mr. Anime Season 3, and his first video was actually a short film titled The Renters. It's almost 3 minutes long and features three of his friends as renters, while Trey plays the landlord. If I'm being honest, it was, pretty terrible, actually. The video is a rotten potato quality and painfully cheesy. But, to be fair, we all suck in the beginning. There aren't many prodigies in real life. Most of us just kind of learn through the pains of failure. It sucks, but that's why we tell ourselves it builds character, so we can move past it. Besides, the main thing you needed to succeed back then was likability, and I mean, yeah, Trey had that. Although his editing skills were good, I will give him that. I mean, he put real effort into it. There's a scene where he slips on a dumbbell and faceplants. He added rolling credits. It was an actual short film, only with the worst script and actors of all time. He never spoke to the camera directly until the fifth video, and I mention this because I feel like, I don't know, it's probably not the best message to put out there since his previous skits involved shooting scenes with exploding blood packs beneath their shirts. I guess he just decided to do a tutorial on how they made that happen without professional equipment. So, after filling a Ziploc bag with fake blood, he tapes it to a piece of cardboard and adds a firecracker to the mix. And then he tapes it all to the middle of his torso beneath his shirt, lights the firecracker, lowers his shirt over it, and boom. Blood splatter. Which, yeah, I mean, I know some are technically safe to hold, but I feel like some kids may not understand the distinction when he follows this demonstration up with, quote, "The more powerful firecracker you have, obviously the better it's gonna be, but that pretty much sums up how to make a good bullet hit." I mean, guys, with all due respect, we live in a world where kids really actually ate Tide Pods. You know, I'm just throwing that out there for you. Unfortunately, I have no idea how these were received at the time, but the vast majority of videos involve shootouts or sword fights. Trey wouldn't even advertise reviews until September 19th of 2007, with a 23-second video featuring white text on a black screen asking one simple question. Are you a fan of anime? While anyone with sense is still shaking their heads in affirmation, the text goes on to announce Mr. Anime will soon be producing video reviews with a blast of comedy. Then the very next day, he uploaded a video of himself speaking directly to the camera as he reviewed Inuyasha. This is the format that would ultimately make him one of the most iconic OG YouTubers of all time. He seems to really hate Poor Shippo, but he wasn't fond of the series as a whole. Overall, it only received a 5 out of 10 rating, which, considering it's one of the most popular animes of all time, and therefore usually given excellent reviews, Mr. Anime unwittingly set himself apart from the pack. He was extremely casual to the point of eating lunch during the review, and somehow he even managed to talk with his mouth full in a non-offensive way people couldn't help but, well, admire. Other reviewers would clearly fake their opinion or try to adopt some kind of gimmick, but Mr. Anime gave every show a fair shot and his actual feedback. From here out, reviews would become a seasonal occurrence, and he continued filming comedy skits with the occasional tutorial thrown in for good measure. I can forgive his complaints about Inuyasha. I mean, most are valid, but his hateful review of Yu-Gi-Oh! Exposed him as soulless fairly early in his career. Though, I mean, listen, Paige wrote this, and I feel like Paige feels very strongly about Yu-Gi-Oh! I mean, I'm personally an old school. Look, let's move on, and you can judge him for yourself. To get an idea of his channel growth rate, a video uploaded in January 2008 mentioned the highest view count of a Mr. Anime episode was a little over 2,000, which was much more than he expected. Given his small audience size, he didn't believe many of them were likely to also be interested in watching anime reviews. It's actually pretty common for YouTubers to begin as one thing and then kind of transition into something completely different, but maybe not so much 14 years ago. The channel didn't grow much over that year. A video from November is titled "The Future of Mr. Anime," and in it, Trey says he hopes to have 1,000 subscribers before the end of December. He didn't quite make his goal, but he didn't miss it by too much. The 1,000 subscriber tribute was uploaded in late January of 2009 as a quick thank you to the fans. But it's odd to watch that now that we know who he ultimately becomes. In March, he posted his first video game review by playing Super Mario Kart, which was admittedly and excellent choice, but scripting and directing short films remained his primary passion. He did 3 quick reviews in succession, and the rest were few and far between. Before we move on to what Trey was doing in the real world, I want to share a few things I learned from a Q&A video he posted that April. One of the questions asks if he has a girlfriend, and in my opinion, his, quote, "No, I tried that in high school," response, coupled with the gesture of sliding his thumb across his throat, kind of felt like actual indifference. He probably wasn't single by choice, but he wasn't crying about it like an incel either. I just think he was actually genuinely indifferent to the matter. It's an interesting bit of irony, I think you'll all appreciate, is question number 13. How many people have you killed? Unfortunately, it's being asked a few years too soon. Well, that was a terrible joke. He's never been shy to admit his preference for short films over reviews, but we get a small glimpse at how wide the gap really is when question 23 is asked. Will there be a Mr. Anime Season 3? And Trey's only response is, "I hope not." Regardless of his preference, Mr. Anime is what got him the most clicks, so he had to keep doing it. Of course, the numbers still weren't high. In the first half of 2009, he says he's almost to 1,250 subscribers, but his views were rising at better rates. Mark had also started his own channel for reviews and became the Anime Analyst. Trey promoted him often, and many of Mr. Anime's third season episodes featured Mark as a guest. I stared at the computer screen for over an hour after I watched the review of Full Metal Panic. I didn't include it before, but Mark actually like gave Trey a box set of collection for Christmas a couple years prior. It kind of became like a little bit of a thing on the show, you know? Like, Trey really loved the gift. He planned to watch and review it for a Mr. Anime episode, but, you know, life got in the way, the review got delayed, announced again, delayed, over and over, and you get the drift. Then, finally, on September 6th, Mr. Anime posted an almost 10-minute-long video where he and Mark discussed it together. And because it's still Trey, the video obviously includes a long, elaborate fight scene. But it ends with the brothers going inside to watch anime together. To see it knowing what's coming. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, there's really honestly nothing that can be said, so we're simply going to move on for now. We'll be coming back to this soon enough anyway. Though despite years of experience, neither brother's acting skills had really improved in the slightest. Let's switch gears and talk about what Trey was up to in the real world for a moment. After graduating in 07, he attended college but had trouble holding a regular job, and this became a point of contention with his father. Trey worked at grocery stores, a campground, pizza place, ice cream shop, gas station. I mean, hell, he even worked at a go-kart track, but he never lasted very long at any of them. As he put more time and energy into his channel, matters of the real world began to interest Trey less and less. With a few key exceptions. Serial killers and mass shootings. Early 2009 was when he posted his first video discussing the topic, but there wasn't anything alarming in the video itself. He simply discussed his disappointment with society from the perspective of a, quote, "responsible gun owner." Another notable moment of irony. Aside from a strange analysis of what he thinks would happen if the U.S. was invaded, he doesn't mention the subject again for several months. That November, during Trey's second year of college, he announced he's majoring in sociology and has 4 more years to go in order to earn his master's degree. I mean, is it wrong to laugh at that? Is that inappropriate? You know what? I didn't ask. Trey's spiral. 2010 starts off seeming to be Trey's best year ever, but soon takes a notable turn in March when Trey uploaded his 2,000 subscriber tribute, another 4-minute film with his brother. It's mostly just another fight scene, but it's nice to have a basic idea of the channel's growth rate with the timeline. It seems like he gets serious about building his audience at this point because he suddenly does a long string of reviews with minimal skits in between. Though, considering what's coming, It could be that he simply didn't have time to make his usual content. The first warning signs didn't appear on camera until a September 25th upload, where Trey mentions one of his rabbits is missing. Of course, to those watching at home, just like it was in any other week, didn't immediately seem like a red flag. I mean, runaway pets are a fairly common occurrence, right? His bunny somehow escaped from his hatch, hadn't come back yet, you know, that's all. But if that is the case, his next statement of, quote, "So you won't be seeing him anymore, unfortunately," ha ha, feels particularly ominous, especially the creepy chuckle at the end. I mean, it's painfully clear he's pleased with his little deception. His upload frequency noticeably dropped, but after his first missing bunny comment, things were mostly business as usual. Until November 12th, when "Mr. Anime is Injured" was uploaded. Trey appears on camera with a slightly swollen cut on his left cheek. Due to legal and insurance reasons, he cannot disclose any details about the accident. But he wanted to let fans know he wouldn't be able to appear on camera for a while. You know, except for in the video that they were currently watching. He felt his face wasn't suitable for filming, which I feel like it was kind of just an excuse to continue slacking off, but hey, what do I know? He estimated it could take a week to heal, but hoped it would be sooner. I mean, seriously, guys, look, it was this, like, tiny cut on his cheek. I mean, I just can't eat. Anyway, it was sus as hell. I checked the next upload date to see how long the week had stretched out, which, for the record, was December 5th and the final video of the year. But the title alone said it all. Missing Bunny Documentary. My heart sank. What the hell had this little prick done now? Thankfully, it's less than 2 minutes, but he did put a significant amount of effort into copying a cliche unsolved mysteries documentary. He treats it like any other comedy routine. He used a deep voice changer for the dramatic narrator and told his story from the perspective of a family member being interviewed. Essentially, he claims to have gone out to the cage like any other day, but Toby was gone, leaving only a small trace of fur behind. Well, the rabbit's name was Toby until this documentary, and then it was suddenly the payoff. I think I missed an inside joke, but we're over 200 episodes into this garbage. You'll have to cut me a little bit of slack on this one, you know. Yeah. Fuck. Anyway, he inserted a picture of a police officer and did some kind of drunken squirrel voice to say there was no sign of criminal activity. But continuing in the mockumentary style, interviewee Trey returned to give his theory that Toby was kidnapped. When he pretended to be choked up at the loss, I had serious Randy stare flashbacks of just wanting to shake somebody. I can't be completely sure, but it forced to guess the first time Trey uploaded a video while drunk. I mean, I would say probably Mr. Anime Review Zip Bang from, what was it, January 2nd, 2011. He deviated from his usual format of sitting at a table to standing and adding a few screenshots of the anime between talking points. But it didn't seem well thought out. Aside from the uncomfortable camera angle, there was a few moments where his jokes kind of spiral into something that one might hear in a drunk man's rant. He'd always seemed comfortable with his audience, but this seemed like he was getting a little too comfortable and being a little too honest, if you know what I mean. It's round about this time Trey's grandmother dies. Her home was located in Hempstead, just a 15-minute drive from Waller. So Trey moved in to keep an eye on the property. His time spent there alone allowed his imagination to run wild. And he withdrew further and further from reality. On January 16th, Trey uploaded a video to announce an AMV contest. That's not relevant to our story, but like AMVs are fan-made anime music videos. Honestly, I used to do them back in the day and they were pretty lit, but that's besides the point. Among certain communities, the art of combining anime clips to popular songs is practically a sport. And, you know, to be fair, a lot of them are super cool and delightful. This contest announcement also served as his 3,000 subscribers' tribute. Mr. Anime Reviews continued to outshine his short films, so Trey made a plea to his audience in hopes they give his other content a chance. But it seems to have largely fallen on deaf ears. Despite what the analytics said, he wanted his primary focus to be on making short films, and that's why he spent the next several weeks preparing for another new mini-series. On February 25th, he announced The Trey Show would revolve around life living with his twin. Cloning himself was a trick he used since the beginning of his YouTube career, so it's not surprising he'd continue the theme. The first episode was uploaded just 3 days later, though we're now going on 5 years of this and his acting skills still hadn't improved. He just was too generous with the laugh track. I mean, fuck, I'm just saying. God. The new show coupled with Mr. Anime episodes are enough to keep Trey busy through March, and it's heartbreaking to see that he adopts a kitten and a ferret in the following weeks. But let's skip to April 14th when he uploads Mr. Anime is Drunk. I'm not sure if he intended people to think that he was only pretending to drink, or if he actually wanted to show that he didn't care what people thought of his drinking, or, you know, if I've missed the agenda entirely, fuck, I don't know. I'm simply going to relay what he said while sloshing around his beer bottle on the Mr. Anime set. Except I'm going to spare you the slurring. The whole thing's only 2 minutes long. Trey starts with the usual introduction of, "Hi, I'm Mr. Anime," but spices things up with, "I don't really have a show for you. I don't even know why I'm here." He claims he was chilling at a bar, but his executive producer dragged him away and suggested doing a video about being drunk and fucked up. You know, because he already looked so drunk and fucked up. You gotta love the good old let's use the truth and pretend it's a joke strategy, because that works so well. Most of his ramblings sound like nonsense if you aren't aware that he's, you know, referencing earlier skits when calling Inuyasha his neighbor, but to be fair, you can barely understand his words at all during that part. After he says the outro, there's a quick pause, like he's waiting for the camera to be cut off, before having an outburst that, well, whether it was planned or not, was way certainly drunken. "Did I just do a review? What the hell am I doing here? John, are you guys exposing me for my drunkenness?" And the video ends with him falling to the ground. His first shooting demonstration came on September 1st. He took a .22 caliber pistol to an isolated overpass and shot at a soda can until finally hitting it. Though it was a short video, he seems to have enjoyed it because he returned to the same location 5 days later with a 9mm rifle test. And if I'm not mistaken, he seems to be slurring for this one. He also used edits to ensure that he actually hit his targets. Trey's mental health was declining at a rapid pace. Not only was he drinking more than ever, he periodically abused other substances such as Seroquel, Xanax, weed, methamphetamines, and Oxycontin. And sometimes he would pawn a gun in order to buy drugs until he got more money. I'm not sure exactly where he dropped out of college, but according to a Q&A, he was still attending as of that December. This is also the video where Trey shows off an AR-15 with a 100-round magazine. As we move along, just remember that this is something he owns. An automatic rifle with a 100-round magazine. Okay? Keep that in the back of your head. Lawton was understandably upset to learn his son was quitting school. Their arguments grew worse and more frequent, but it wasn't the only source of contention between the two. The family had also developed a deep concern for Trey's alcohol consumption. Even Mark tried to intervene when it came to his brother's drinking, but he was unable to make an impact. It's hard to pinpoint the first time it happened, but comments accusing Mr. Anime of using his pets for target practice began to make their appearance. Some were merely the speculation of those connecting his love of guns and increasingly strange behavior to his missing pets. But others were from people claiming to have seen the events unfold in real life. Spoiler alert, they weren't just rumors. He also developed an obsession with serial killers, and much like our first subject, Randy Stair, Mr. Anime took a particular interest in the Columbine High massacre. He even filled notebooks with different killer statistics and gave them all a rating between 1 and 10, with his personal thoughts on each subject. Though unlike Randy, Trey actually attempted to hide his descent into madness. People could tell something was wrong, but they didn't understand just how wrong. His main goal, the dream he spent most of his time planning, was his ultimate fantasy of getting the highest kill count possible in his own shooting spree. His target kill count was a minimum of 70 victims. He wanted to do something that would truly shake the world to its core. Ultimately, Trey decided the best way to do this was with a school shooting. And his primary focus became Waller High, where he himself had graduated. He even studied satellite images of the school while making his plans. The idea was to wait for the homecoming game and shoot into the stands until being killed or captured by police. In order to practice for the big event, Trey would go around town at night starting small fires and shooting into empty buildings. That Christmas, Trey told a friend he was planning to kill his father because he believed Lawton had given up on him. He hadn't, but you couldn't convince Trey otherwise. The fights with Mark and Lawton over his alcohol and drug use continued to grow worse through the holiday. And finally, on December 27th, Trey uploaded a video titled, "Bad News, Please Watch," where he told fans he had been diagnosed with pneumothorax.
A pneumo what now?
Basically, pneumothorax meant that one of his lungs was leaking air. What caused his condition is unknown, but he was in pain, having difficulty breathing, and not sleeping well among a slew of other symptoms. How much of it was true? Who knows? In February of 2012, Trey uploaded a video to inform his fans he'd be taking a 2 to 3 week vacation as a way of rewarding himself. And during that time, his strange behavior would increase significantly. Roughly 2 weeks later, Trey actually called the police from his backyard to report a bullet whizzing past his head, and he told the dispatcher his guns were ready. Officers did come out to investigate, but they found nothing out of the ordinary. In March, he uploaded Mr. Anime's New Job, where he announced receiving a position at a filmmaking company, but he didn't reveal which one, probably because it didn't exist. Then he advised that while he wouldn't have as much time to make videos, he would try to maintain a blogging presence. While many would be surprised by this announcement, not even Trey realized that this would actually be his final video. The murder. On March 19th, he began drinking and continued straight through into the early morning hours of the 20th. Despite how drunk he was, he managed to get himself back to his parents, and he was armed. Obviously, the family was not expecting him. Rhonda and Mark were still awake, so Trey called his mother into the garage under the guise of checking something on his car. When they were alone, he shot her at point-blank range in the chest. He regretted his actions instantly, but it didn't matter if he changed his mind. It was too late to turn back. He couldn't very well go tell Mark and his father, "Hey, I had just killed Mom. Sorry." No. That was unthinkable. Not understanding what he heard, Mark called out, complaining of the loud noise. And without saying a word, Trey walked right past his brother, retrieved a Glock 9mm full of hollow points, entered the hallway, and shot Mark twice. The noise finally woke Lawton, who was upstairs in bed, and he too called out in confusion. So, Trey went upstairs, entered his parents' bedroom, and shot his father twice in the head. He then retraced his steps through the home to ensure no one was still in pain. And somehow, his brother had indeed survived long enough to crawl into a bathroom where he locked himself inside. Trey shot through the door several times before hitting the deadlock and kicking it open to find his brother curled in fetal position, unmoving. Wanting to be absolutely sure everyone was dead, he retrieved his AR-15 and returned to the garage where Rhonda still lay in the same position. He put 2 bullets in her head, just to be sure,
Then he decided it was best to do the same to Mark and Lawton as well. With his loved ones definitely dead, Trey left voicemails with the school and newspaper to inform them his parents would not be able to make it into work. Then he killed the family pets, broke almost every piece of glass in the house, wrote confessions all over the walls, doors, and cabinets, and essentially wrecked everything he could lay his hands on. He even ripped the stove door off its hinges and emptied the refrigerator. Police would later describe it as a war zone. The messages expressed regret for his actions. He wrote things like, "Why did I do this?" and "God forgive me because I cannot forgive myself," among other similar sentiments before going back into the garage, curling up next to his mother's body, and falling asleep. The aftermath. When he was ready to leave his childhood home for the final time, Trey loaded his rifle and more than 100 rounds of ammunition into his Mustang and headed towards his old school, ready to complete his master plan. Once there, he remained in the parking lot, just sitting in his vehicle for an extended period of time. Thankfully, he couldn't go through with his horrible intentions. Things had simply become too real for Trey. Instead, he drove to a friend's house in Magnolia. While this was happening, neighbors called the police to report gunfire, but no immediate action was taken. It wouldn't be until another relative had grown concerned for Rhonda and Lawton not returning their calls that officers would make their way to the scene at roughly 1 o'clock that afternoon. They began by searching the perimeter before looking through the home's windows, but once they saw the damage inside, they entered immediately to discover the three dead bodies of Rhonda, Lawton, and Mark Sessler, along with Trey's written confessions. Ultimately, they would find and arrest him at the friend's house. During interrogation, Trey said he loved his family and would protect them with his life, but at the same time, if anyone was going to hurt them, it was going to be him. He also had a morbid fascination with their deaths, and he asked for very specific details on their autopsy reports, such as which shots delivered the fatal blows. At one point in his interrogation, Trey places partial blame for his actions on the internet, stating, quote, "Without the internet, I really don't think I'd be sitting here. The internet has the web of information that I needed to study these events that otherwise would not necessarily be recorded." Basically, he's trying to say he wouldn't have been able to formulate his big fucking plans if the computer hadn't taught him what he needed to know. Then again, he also told police he couldn't go more than a few days without the urge to commit violent acts. He wrote a 12-page manifesto outlining other killers' strengths and weaknesses. I mean, good God. Perhaps the worst part is the reason that he gave for murdering every member of his family. He only killed them so they wouldn't have to endure the shame of knowing what he really was. Obviously, since he didn't go through with the mass shooting, this means three people died for literally no reason. Don't get me wrong, we should all be extremely thankful that the situation didn't end significantly worse. I'm just pointing out an observation in his logic, and honestly, that's some kind of logic. In the end, Trey pled guilty to murdering his family. And in August of 2012, he was sentenced to life without the chance of parole. So far, he's never appealed or contested the sentence. He's made statements saying he belongs behind bars for what he did. And in the following years, there were several rumors he committed suicide in prison. But they proved to be false. He's still alive and in the special care of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. When his channel was finally deleted in September of 2012, it had 323 videos. But, as discussed, they have been re-uploaded to YouTube. The conclusion. That, my friends, was the story of Trey Sessler. But I want to conclude this episode with something infinitely more important. As I've said before, we don't research these cases solely to entertain those with a love for the dark and dreadful. I mean, that's just a happy bonus that comes with the territory. Well, stay twisted, friends. We love ya. But seriously, these podcasts serve two much higher, sincere, serious agendas. First, to educate others in recognizing possible red flags in their own lives. Or, hell, I mean, even in a favorite YouTuber. You never know where you will see it. That's the point. And second, we're here to honor the victims. In this instance, three wonderful people lost their lives in a span of minutes for literally no reason. So I just want to say a few more words about them. Lawton was a kind man who dedicated his life to not only his family, but the children he taught. And Rhonda's co-workers described her as a precise wordsmith with a, quote, contagious laugh that could help even the darkest day seem a little brighter. Her high school best friend, Jeanette Garrett, wrote an article in 2016 discussing this case in great detail, including how Rhonda would adopt the unpopular girls, taking them in under her wing, how she went on to become their class valedictorian before ultimately graduating from Houston State University in Huntsville. Mark's case hurts the most. After watching him perform goofy stunts with his little brother for hours upon hours, it's impossible not to feel like you maybe kind of knew him a little, you know? By all accounts, he was a loyal friend and a good man. No matter how far down the rabbit hole Trey took himself, Mark refused to give up on his little brother. I can't begin to imagine what he must have thought as Trey raised his gun in that hallway, or the agony that he must have endured on his crawl to the bathroom after years of dedicating so much of his time to his little brother. He deserved far more from life. Remember the Sessler family fondly. May they rest in peace. Once again, we must emerge from our cozy darkness. But this time, we do so with the comfort of knowing it's finally fall, baby. And if you've liked our content so far, just wait until you see what's coming next. Make sure you're following us on TikTok for all the latest updates. And if you're joining in on YouTube, don't forget to subscribe and hit the bell so you never miss an upload. Or not, you know, that's cool. Like, I'm going to find you, but that's cool too. Either way, I'll be back next week with another tale from our endless journey through the dark side of YouTube. In the meantime, if you want to know more about the Mr. Anime case, I highly recommend checking out the video by Coffeehouse Crime and Jeanette's article on crimemagazine.com. Oh, and as always, Darksiders, don't forget, don't do anything I wouldn't do. In light of this episode and the discussion about mental health, I personally would like to add something on. And to be honest, I don't know if it's going to make it or if it's going to get cut, but I feel like it's important for me personally to say. I pride myself on making, you know, daily motivation videos, let's call them, or somewhat motivational content when I can and when I'm up for it. And as someone who struggles with their own personal mental health issues, I know what it's like to have to deal with, you know, all manner of bullshit and what that looks like, especially in a country that doesn't exactly support people who have mental health issues of any capacity. Some of us don't have the support we need. Some of us can't afford it. Some of us just don't know how to ask for help because we didn't have the toolbox to be able to say, hey, I can't do this alone. So I just wanted to say that sometimes you need to take a step back. Check on your friends, especially the ones that are making jokes and smiling and laughing, because sometimes those are the people that hide it the best. If you yourself are struggling, I implore you. I know how hard it is to ask someone else for help. Find somebody that you trust. Tell them that you can't do it by yourself, even if you can't use the words directly. I would ask that you find a way to open that toolbox up and grab what you can out of the box to say that you need a little bit of help fixing the pipes, you know? If a friend of yours has you concerned, check in on them. It takes 2 seconds to send a hello. And even if they may not reply, sometimes just hearing that somebody cares matters the world over to people. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to others. We can't make progress to continue to be better versions of ourselves if we're not willing to to get out there and give it an honest effort. Sometimes that effort's really fucking hard, and that's okay. But at least try, you know? So please take care of yourselves, and please take care of each other the best you can. That's all I'd ask.